Dad's clearance. Have a great show.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Absolute Scenes, the podcast that takes a knife to the pumpkin of the creative industry, slices it open, scoops out its innards and carves a wicked and toothy smile on its flesh. I am Gabrielle Shepherd and joining me as always, like a stray black cat that wandered in one day and never left, is Andy Barton.
Hello internet, how are you?
I'm very well, how are you?
Yeah, pretty good. I'm quite good. It's
How sunny. Has your day been so far?
Day has been nice. It's been sunny. Voted. Although this is
going to we're coming from voting day.
Voting day today, yeah.
Yes.
So please, new government, give arts lots of money.
So as always, we are coming to you from...
Live-ish, sort of. I mean, live as we record this. From the Bristol Old Vic and in association with the Bristol Old Vic Theatre. So thank you once again to them. And this week we're going to be talking about casting, also known as auditions, really.
Our special guest coming up is the ever wonderful Jessica Jefferies, who will be talking about her life as a casting director, talking through the casting process from her point of view, and of course telling her absolute scene to us. And obviously the absolute scene is a scene from a play, a TV show, a feature film that inspires her or give her goosebumps, or maybe it's a scene that she turns to when she's at a low point of creativity or, you know, not feeling inspired. So that is what you're about to hear.
But first, so this episode is really about the casting process. So more often than not, when you go and watch something, so when you as an audience member go and watch something on stage, or maybe there's even for like bands and things like this, more often than not, those performers have usually auditioned to be in that role, to play that thing.
It's our interview process.
Yeah.
Basically.
It's a weird one. And it is an interview. So if you imagine that you have a career as a creative, as a performer of any sort of arts, that you've got to audition, interview every single time, which obviously, you know, for any job, you have to sort of usually interview. Mm-hmm. But imagine having to do that 3, 4, 5, sometimes more times a month.
If you're lucky, I would say.
And then in order so that you can work enough times each month to get a steady wage, passing said auditions as well.
Mm-hmm. And also in terms of like when we say passing as well, like it's sometimes you might not get a job, nothing to do with how good you are. No. It can be like whether you fit together with the rest of the cast or, you know, if you've got the right feeling. I don't think it's ever that you're bad. And actually, no. Jess touches on this later in the fact that like casting directors and companies don't bring in people who they don't think are going to be amazing and they don't will to be good.
Yep.
So it's that thing of like often, now I've done casting, I've been on the other side of the table. You want everyone to be amazing. They are all amazing. Mm. And then it's actually a really difficult decision.
Yeah.
And sometimes as actors, we take it very personally, but actually it's not that you're not good.
No.
Generally ever, I would say.
No. And there's 1,001 reasons why you wouldn't get a role or get a job. Mm-hmm. And there's 1,001 reasons why you would get a job.
Mm-hmm.
I remember doing a McDonald's advert, or at least auditioning for a McDonald's advert, to play the father role with complete strangers. And I didn't get the role, funny enough, because and I had a recall and various things because I just didn't fit with when I watched the advert, I was like,
And actually, often you do when you watch something, you go, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. If that was their vision, or even if it wasn't their vision, that's the other thing. Sometimes you'll be auditioning and the team has a vision, not that you know what that is, and then someone comes in and does something that they're like, oh my God, that is actually what we want. Yeah. And like, it's nothing to do with, you might have been their vision, but then something comes that's so left field, they're just like, oh my God, actually we need to go in that direction. So often these auditions are, just kind of, it's nothing to do with how good you are. But it is difficult if you are auditioning to not get things over and over and over again.
One thing that I've learned in this industry isn't necessarily about nailing an audition. I mean, that's always important, but also about them spending time on a job to show that you want people want to then spend more time with you even after the job has finished. Yeah.
I would say for an audition, people talk about booking the room a lot, where if you go into an audition, it's not necessarily about booking the job, although we'd all love to book the job. It's also about, you know, really just enjoying it and doing your best work, because then they'll think of you next time if you weren't right for it this time. And it's kind of that continued, like, it's just about playing and working together, and that thing of like, even if they want to work with you after the job, often if you do a really good open audition as yourself, they'll then want you again late. They'll think of you later, which is good.
No, absolutely. So for our laypersons who may not be, who not necessarily in the industry, now traditionally, but years ago, you would maybe send a script you'd be sent the scripts, you have to learn lines, and then you would turn up and there'll be many, many people who all look
exactly like you. which has changed now, actually.
That has changed,
than often I'll walk in and everyone look different, which I love.
Yeah, that's great. But you'd sort of go along, and then you would be called, sort of like sign in, and then you'd sit outside the room for however long, and then you'd be called in, and then you'd there'd be sort of 3-4 sometimes more people behind a desk. Maybe there'll be a camera on, maybe there wouldn't, all dependent on what it's for, whether it's for a play or for a film or whatever it might be. And you would say read your part, because sometimes you would do it on script, but more often than not, it's usually best to do it off script. You do the scene, maybe there'd be a bit of what we call workshopping, whereby the director or the casting director may ask to do it in a slightly different way.
Give some pointers, some
notes. They may give some small amounts of notes or direction, and then everyone would smile, wave goodbye, and then you would wait to hear from your agent or otherwise about whether you got the job. Or you would hear nothing and then just assume that you didn't get a job.
Yeah.
Because that's more often
than not. Very much happens now.
so that was kind of what used to happen. Things evolved quite quickly when the pandemic hit and lockdown happened. And then after sort of post 2020, 2021, self-tapes used to happen before this anyway.
Yeah.
But when lockdown occurred, or after lockdown...
Became the only way to audition, because we weren't physically allowed to be with each other.
Yeah.
So it suddenly was a medium that everyone was using. And as a result, even though in-person auditions are back, it's now become a language and a way of auditioning that everyone uses.
Yeah.
And actually it's been, again, we talk about this with Jessica, it's been an incredible change, but also some people see it as a very negative change. So there's a split within the industry as to which is better. But we'll come to that more with Jessica later.
Yeah. I think everyone's opinion on it is valid.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I don't think anyone can win.
No.
I think you've just got to
go with the flow.
Yeah.
Because every casting director will do it differently. Every company will do it differently. Every actor has their own preference. So I think, you know, it's just about being able to do both if you can.
Yeah.
And then just going with it and going with the flow.
So what they'll do now is that they'll tend to, and this is something that it's a very generic sort of umbrella explanation I'm giving, but what we've seen over the last sort of 4 years is that they tend to do a wide search of self-tapes. There'll be quite a lot of self-tapes
For
the first round.
Yeah.
And then for what we used to call recalls, because you'd be recalled back into the room.
Mm-hmm.
They call them recalls still, but it's not like you're having to be recalled anywhere. You would actually then be asked to come
into the
room. And again, it's called into the room because it used to be that you would be in the room.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's still quite a brutal process, because the casting directors will take, having narrowed from those various and sometimes these casting directors, sometimes they have 3 or 4 weeks to do all this in. Sometimes they have 3 days.
Yes. Again, that, we touch on this with Jessica.
Yeah. And then that all goes to the producer again, and it will be dependent on the production that they're making. Sometimes it will go to producers, sometimes it will go straight to the director, who will then make a decision as to which actors, actresses...
They fight it out between them, because often they have very different opinions and they have to sort of like persuade each other, and not everyone's always left happy in the team.
And availability, but, and,
yeah, true,
and that sort of thing.
But... you know, a good casting director is able to kind of mitigate that, and kind of sometimes they really push for certain people that they really believe in. Sometimes they sort of like trust the director. You know, it totally depends on the team that's working on it.
There is lots and lots of resources out there from excellent people, excellent casting directors, and about how to do self-tapes.
Mm-hmm. Some of them have it on their website.
Yes.
There's also courses that you can go and do. Yeah. This is not affiliated in any way, but I would personally recommend Mixing Networks on how to do a self-tape. Not necessarily the acting side of things, although it obviously touches on that, but I found that really helpful to nail how to do a setup, how to angle the camera, like things to be aware of. So something like that's really helpful.
We'll leave some links in our description section below, however you are listening to this, so that you can sort of like click on there and have a look, and you know, also sort of like just search on the internet around self-tape tips. There are some sort of generic classic ones, so we'll go into them in a second. A lot of casting directors now will actually give you some very
specific
instructions. Rule of thumb:
always follow the instructions.
That's it. If they say to do something, do it.
Yeah. File name this. Do it. Just don't give them any reason to like get annoyed with you. Like because they're humans, right? It's not that they're like waiting to like tell you off, but like if they've got to look through 50 tapes and yours is image 112 movie, it's just going to make their life so much harder. So just help them out. They're trying to do a job as well.
The sort of some of the classics, and there are, again, it can evolve as well, and things do evolve
because they change all the time.
But some of the classic ones that seem to have stayed fairly consistent over the last few years, camera at landscape, so on its side,
at eye level.
Filmed on the whole from either waist or sternum up. Mm-hmm. We haven't disclosed this yet. So I used to be an agent. I was an agent for 3 years for a...
Andy has lived many lives, listener.
For an agency. And one client filmed in a fully mirrored... did a self-tape.
Disco ball insides.
A fully mirrored bathroom. I mean, it was impressive.
What was it for, though?
It was for a feature film. And I want to say it was for a period drama. I'm pretty certain it was for a period drama.
So intense.
Did
you ask them to refilm it?
I did, and they said that they didn't have time, so that's what we had to submit. I mean, they didn't get the role, but...
Don't do that.
Mirrors don't.
I'm sure it gives an incredible effect.
I mean,
I'm sure, like, if you were shooting a short film, perfect.
But
however,
I mean, if you're going for the John Wick 5, then yeah, because that's I tell
but
you,
just don't let it be too distracting.
Incredible bathroom. I mean, the bathroom is incredible, but
Well, on that note, shall we dive in and go and meet Jessica?
Absolutely. Welcome back. Thank you for waiting there for 3.5 seconds of bed music. And now we return with our special guests. You may remember her from such casting rooms for Diablo 2 Resurrected or even Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. Her clients include Sony Pictures, Games Workshop and Universal Studios. And she's been nominated on several occasions for awards by the Casting Directors Association. It's Jess Jeffries!
Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah. Well, it's by my house.
That's all we could wish
for. I like not having to travel.
We like to be convenient, mainly.
Yeah.
So we usually sort of do an icebreaker question.
Okay.
This is a surprise for Jessica.
Oh, yeah, so we didn't tell you about this.
No. I read my email so thoroughly that you sent.
I know, this is the one surprise that we're going to get. There are no more surprises, I promise.
Right. Go for it.
So the question to sort of like just start us off is, would you rather be trapped in an adventure movie with your enemies or a horror movie with your friends?
Adventure movie with my enemies. I can't do horror. I'm rubbish. I'm scared so easily. Witches. Hello, I've cast a lot of horror. And I was in a lot of horror games and stuff when I was an actor.
But it's different when you know what's happening.
Yes. Right? Oh, but I was still, like, there's things that I can't watch even though I'm in them. And stuff. Like, I can't do horror. No. No, thank you.
Interesting.
Even with my friends, no, thank you.
Do you think there's a sort of going back, a particular reason for it? Or is it just...
I'm a wimp. I'm a wimp with an overactive imagination.
I think that's valid.
Yeah. That's it.
So if you were in this adventure movie with your enemies, what would be your sort of technique? Or what would be your sort of game plan to get through said adventure?
Coping mechanisms.
Thank you.
Yeah, coping mechanisms. Yeah. I think probably just being as passive aggressive as possible.
Would you stay with them or would you like just go somewhere? Will you
have your own adventure? I can't be bothered to spend time with people that I don't like. No, leave me alone, go away.
Have you done that quite a lot in your life? Is this like a learning experience for you? Or have you just never suffered fools?
I don't know. I think maybe unconsciously, as you gravitate towards people that you like working with and like spending time with. Yep. So I think I've probably done that and then naturally gravitate away from the people that you don't like spending time with and stuff. Mm. So no, I'm fine on my own as well.
Oh, great.
I need a bit of alone time every now and again. Like I can be quite insular and cerebral and stuff. And I'm a big overthinker. So, same. Yeah.
If there was, I guess, like, so in the zeitgeist now, if there was an adventure narrative that is sort of around, be it, you know, from many years ago or sort of around now, what one would suit this sort of scenario now? So, like, what adventure would you quite like to be in?
What adventure would I like? My brain just automatically goes to the Hunger Games, but I would not want to be in the Hunger Games.
Love the Hunger Games.
But it is great. Have you seen the latest one?
Yes.
The prequel.
No,
it's terrible.
Yeah.
Don't do it to yourself, unfortunately. But I loved the books when I was a teenager, like the Hunger Games books, and I really liked the films, and I really like archery. Like I just always loved playing with a bow and arrow. So I think I'd want to do that. And I think if there was like one job that I wished I could have done, I think it probably, I've never said this before, but I think it would probably be to be Katniss Everdeen.
Oh, nice.
I think that would be
such fun. Do you still do archery?
No, I haven't done it. We did it at drama school. It was one of the things we did on the course. And then I did a game, which was a very fun game called Horizon Zero Dawn. I was in it with my now husband and my best mate, just playing with bows and arrows.
That's incredible.
For like 6 months.
Yeah.
That was a fun job.
Would you say that's one of your favourite jobs?
I think that was one of my favourite jobs.
Oh my God. That's one of my favourite. I mean, that's also one of my favourite
is
games.
Is it?
He said this before.
I know, yeah.
It's a great game.
I have to.
And I can watch and play that one because it's not scary.
Yeah. It is an amazing game.
It's really good.
It is good.
Is it weird, like, because obviously, like, a lot of actors don't watch themselves. But I guess in a video game, it's, like, a different thing. Like, how is that for you?
I don't know. I think in some ways it's weirder because I never acted in a game or anything where it looked like me.
Of course.
So,
okay.
I was never the likeness of a character. So I'm then watching things like, that's me.
I moved my arm.
That moves just like me and stuff. And like,
but is it your voice?
I could not tell you which ones are and aren't.
Okay.
On the whole, mostly no. Mostly I did the body capture, the motion capture to somebody else's pre-recorded voice, which is a very tricky thing to do. Mm. And it's done a lot less now. But yeah, you're watching it and you're like, that's me. It does look like as in it moves like me. It's everything. But I think there's that. This is going to probably sound really weird, but it's that I watch it and I think it moves exactly like my little sister, because I think me and my little sister, like, people think that we move. So I watch it and I'm like, well, that just moves like Megan. But because I can't see myself, I don't know how I move all the time, but I just see her in loads of the
mocap. So is it quite like wholesome and like, oh, there's Megan?
Yeah.
Or are you like, oh,
she's... No, it's nice. But,
that's amazing.
Yeah. That was different life. Different life.
When you were an actor.
Yeah, the actor
so
life.
So what was your... Obviously, because you were an actor for 10 years, right?
8 years, yeah. Eight years.
What was that decision to transition? Or was it a slow process? Or like, what was it about casting that you were like, oh, that looks tasty, I'm going to go do that?
I think it was a steady process. There was a few reasons. I think there was a few different reasons that played into one. I felt like I'd hit a ceiling in acting, especially in acting for video games. I was a jobbing video game mocap actor and one of a handful that were working all the time. Lovely. But I was then not getting the leads with, you know, full performance capture, voice and likeness and stuff. I wasn't getting those sorts of things.
Do you know why that was?
Because I didn't have any other profile. So I didn't have a really strong theatre profile or TV or film profile. So
I think that's very relatable for a lot of actors. And
definitely.
Totally. So I sort of felt like I hit a ceiling, but within that ceiling was also a ceiling of overall treatment and fees and all of those things. So, you know, there are no equity guidelines or rate cards or contracts for actors in video games. Mm-hmm. So we were paid badly. And I think there was not mistreatment as in like abuse, but mistreatment in terms of you as a creative,
like your compared skill set to what you bring to the table.
Compared to how you're treated in the rest of the industry. So we'd turn up for a day of filming or a week of filming, not having a clue what project we were working on, what we were going to be asked to do, nothing. Because you turn up, you sign the NDA there, and you do all of this work uncontracted. I don't think I ever signed a contract for some of the biggest games I was ever in. I don't think I ever signed a contract.
Really?
And so you then have no ownership.
Or just, I mean...
To an extent. Because then there's no conversation about how you're going to be credited. Or just
how much they can use it,
reuse it, and all of that sort of thing. And so all of this was happening. And I really wanted it to change. And in 2016, I sort of knocked on Equity's door and was like, hi, this is the video game industry. What can you do to help? And then in 2018, those conversations haven't really gone anywhere. And so...
You just kind of were like, it's time.
I felt like, yeah, I needed to be a buffer. I needed to be... Without this being negative... No,
eternally thankful.
But almost a gatekeeper. To help educate both sides. Mm. Oh, you want great actors? I can find you great actors. Mm. But you've got to pay them, right? And you've got to contract them.
Yeah.
And being somebody that had to go through and not being an actor myself, where I was too worried about losing opportunities and losing work opportunities, I could be that mouthpiece for actors and I could be an advocate for better, fairer pay and contracts and things in the industry. Mm. So that was a big... driving force, along with sort of feeling like I'd run my course. Mm.
And did you start off as like a casting assistant, or were you just like straight in?
No way.
Well done.
It was very silly.
Something that no one else had really done.
I think that's what it was. There was a total shiny naivety to it, because there wasn't anybody doing the casting that I wanted to do. So I was like, well, I'll do it. Like, I can do it.
Yeah. I've got all the knowledge.
And I just had, but I had just such like bold naivety, I think, in being like,
sometimes
well, this
helps,
is what
though.
I need to do. And it happened very quickly then. I had two friends that, right, can I do a shout out?
Absolutely.
Yes, please.
Definitely.
I had two friends called Sam and Sally who run an amazing games company called Wolf Escape Games. They do online escape rooms.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And like, genuinely play their games. It's so good. And they were friends and they'd sort of done a leap of faith themselves in creating this company. And they just kept being like, what are you waiting for? Do it.
Legends.
Do it. Yeah. And then like another mutual friend of ours, Adam, was like, well, look, I've designed you a logo and designed you all this stuff. Shout out to Adam.
Well done, Adam.
I've designed you all this stuff so that you can be a company, so that you can create Jessica Jeffries Casting. So there you go. That's done. Here's your website. Like and they just sort of...
Well, they could obviously see that there's this gap in the market.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, as friends, you would hope that they really saw that you were the right person to do this.
Yeah.
And you, like, would have been really good
and excited.
And
we didn't know each other from the industry at all. Mm. We all went to the gym together.
No way, really?
So I was an actor and a PT. PT was my my side hustle.
Yeah.
And they used to come to all my classes and we all used to hang out. Like, because we used to exercise together. Yeah. And
we had all the endorphins together.
All the rage. So much rage.
But they were so encouraging. And they were just like, that's great. Just do it. Like, you just need to take the leap of faith. And so I'd really, like, built up that this was what I wanted to do. And I'd started putting some feelers out. So when a couple of games companies that I'd acted for had contacted me do another project with them, I'd be like, I'm no longer acting. I can offer you this. Yeah. And this is what a casting process could look like for you and blah, blah, blah. So I went in that direction and literally I was on set on Disney's Maleficent 2 doing all the mocap And I got a call from one of the producers at Access Animation and she was like, we need you to cast a project for us. And I was like, okay. So then I was literally running off set in my lycra, sat at my laptop, like registering for Spotlight, doing all of that as a casting director.
Amazing.
And doing all of that, casting it in the car on the way home. Well, I wasn't driving. car on the way home. And that was it. I then never acted again.
So it was a very clean break.
Yeah, I wrapped on Maleficent and I never put the lycra on again.
Wow. And has it been like a constant since? Like, obviously we were talking earlier about freelance and everything, but like...
Yes, but not in yes and no. Mm-hmm. So at the very beginning, there was a couple of companies that I would cast for them, mainly their mocap cast. So I cast there's a series of games called the Dark Pictures Anthology with Supermassive Games. And I would cast all their mocap cast here in the UK. Mm-hmm. And then I was there on set first AD.
Right. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So I cast them and then worked with the actors as well.
After them.
So I did that for the first year, I'd say. Yeah.
Was that, I don't know if you've come across the wrong way, was that kind of, that role forced upon you because of the circumstances, or was that just the way that things were working and that was okay? Because I know that this industry we all pair up sometimes because, and we also know, I mean, myself, I've been a third and a second AD on feature films. So when you know how to do particular jobs, sometimes you just double up and you have no problem
automatically
doing it.
Happens.
So
I think it was it was one of those natural things, because also first ADs weren't a used, like it didn't really exist in video games in mocaps. So it was something new for this company. They wanted to see how having somebody in that role would also then make shoots more efficient and all of that. And I was the person that knew also how mocap shoots worked. Mm. Yeah. So it felt quite natural. I know now it's progressed incredibly and massively. My husband firsts sometimes as well as directs.
Yeah.
And it's a proper job now, not just me stood there being like, cut, action, T poses, everybody. How's the data? Like, it's an actual job now. But yeah, so I did that. And then luckily enough of the casting. And I sort of, they were the only company I think that I ever, I did a couple of mocap films that I first did for, but it was literally for about, it must have been just over a year, because the last picture of me on set, I was 8.5 months pregnant.
Wow.
on set.
It's like, I could pop at any second.
Yeah. Wow. I know, really could have. And it was, again, that was sort of a clean break. So the other thing I sort of did, I got married, which ruins everything. No, I'm joking. No, I got married, so I also had a clean break with my name. So I had my acting name.
Of course.
And then I became Jessica Jeffries.
And it happened at the same time.
And it happened at the same time. And then I started casting under Jessica Jeffries.
Business decision.
Yeah. So that felt like a complete fresh start.
Was that in the car whilst dressed in lycra?
Oh, yeah.
Is that
how
you turned up to the church?
I didn't
with
wear
tennis
my...
balls, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like ping pong balls attached to you.
Yeah, I just lived in that lycra suit. No.
Well. So I want to... Well, I've got some questions around the casting process now. Because we've been in casting. We've all been in casting, the casting room. But, I mean, many of our listeners would not have been. So we want to sort of do a bit of a pond dip around that. But the other thing around the casting process, how it's changed in the last 5 years post, say, COVID, because COVID's still around, but at least post lockdowns. So I guess the first panoramic open-ended question is, how much has the casting process changed in the last 5 years, at least for you on your side as a casting director?
Loads. Next question. I think it's changed loads, and I try and focus on a lot of the positives. I think it's I think there is such an understanding and such a openness to conversation now about accessibility to castings, so that you don't have to live in central London and have a first round audition, you and 50 other people for one role. I love self-tapes as a first round because I get to see so many more actors.
I
love that.
We were talking about this because we were saying, like, there's such a split actually between actors. Because I would say some friends who are slightly more profiled actors, they always want to be in the room. And I'm like, of course we'd all love that. But also, I'd rather be seen. And obviously, I'm not sure if this is true for you, but a lot of casting directors say they can now see more people.
Totally.
But also it means that it's more accessible in terms of cost, because if you're coming from Edinburgh or, you know, Leicester,
even from here, where it's still sort of like £50
just if you have to get a pig train, it's £150 if you've not got somewhere to stay in London the night before and stuff. It's crazy. So it's kind of like this weird thing of, obviously we'd rather have a personal connection, but I love that it's more accessible.
I think that's such a huge thing, and I think being able to, we've been given the permission to talk about that now and to
So were you not able to talk about it before?
I don't think it's that. I mean, more, it's a conversation that we feel empowered to have. So I feel empowered to say, well, I'd like to, this is how I want to do my process. And actually, well, this actor lives out of London, so I'd rather get a tape from them or meet them on Zoom before meeting them in person.
Great.
Like, and I feel that I've got such a solid foundation to now have that conversation because it works.
And I guess, and off the back of COVID, you've been able to prove that it works without having to, like, be the one to, like, be against everything.
Totally.
It's like everyone did it, right?
Yeah. And I think that comes down to also, I think, childcare.
Yeah.
Like, 100%. Bringing your kids along. Just, like, it feels like a more open and fair industry in terms of that. I also think such a huge change in casting in general is diversity and inclusion. I think we still obviously have such a huge way to go, but I think there's been a leap in the last 5 years, I'd say. There's been some really positive changes, and that comes from also there being a positive change from the audiences about the stories that are being told. You know, they wouldn't be made if audiences didn't want to watch them. Exactly. So now there's way more diversity and variation in the stories that are being told, which allows us to be able to be more creative in the way that we're casting and more inclusive in the way that we're casting. So I'd say all of those are massive positives.
That's great.
Was that all of the question?
What are the negatives?
No. What are the negatives?
Tell us the truth.
I would say the negatives are, I still sometimes have a battle to do any in-person castings.
Yeah.
So
actually have them.
Yes. Yeah. So some people want to cast via Zoom then. So meet people so that it's still, there's a back and forth and it's a conversation, but over Zoom. And I just don't love
especially
that.
For like final round.
Yeah. And I just don't love that. And that's often time and budget restraints. Because
yeah.
they would be paying to hire yeah, a space course, and yeah. paying for X, Y, and Z additionally to cast in person. And maybe, and you know, for me, for my clients, just log on to a computer for 2 hours to meet four actors for a recall audition or final audition, maybe is a lot easier than them traveling into London for an entire day.
Yeah.
To do that.
Yeah.
So I get it, but I really don't like it. I'd say that's a negative.
And do you think it makes a big difference in terms of if you've had a final round in person, like the quality of, or like making the right decision for the project? Like, what is it that's, you know?
I'd like to think that there's not an impact in that way, that we still find the right person. I think there's, yeah, it just lacks such a personal connection.
Yeah.
And also, I don't, something I really like to do is meet actors and create a space that they feel free, playful, truthful, connected, and safe in.
You talk like, about transparency a lot in your work, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I think it's yeah. really important. And I've been in those auditions where you feel like this casting director's on a weird pedestal and not approachable. No, I'm sorry. I'm just a human who wiped two kids' bums this morning already. Like,
let's bring it down yeah, to no. the real the truth here.
Yeah, no, yeah,
that's
exactly.
The truth.
Exactly, yeah. No, definitely.
But so just to be a human, taught, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like, you are on yeah. a pedestal. Yeah. And agents as well. There's like this power thing. But actually, we're all just doing our job and trying to work together.
We're all doing our job. We're, like 90% of us are freelancers. We're all just trying to do our jobs well and hope that another job is coming.
And I think, and this is something that I try and tell people, especially new sort of any students, that when I sort of do the limited sort of amount of teaching that I do, is that, at least in my experience, casting directors want you to get the job. They're not there. They're not there to
waste their own time, your time.
They want you. I mean, it is for the ones, you know, when it's in the room and when you walk in that room, they want to be saying yes to you.
100%.
And I don't.
When I first heard this, though, this was a few years ago. This was a revelation yeah. to me, and that should not be. It should just be like. Yeah. No, like, I don't want to sit here and I want you to be good. I'm willing you to be good. Like,
so much so. Yeah. Like, I think the one thing I say is I'm a freelancer. Mm. I need work.
Yeah.
I want to keep getting work.
Yeah.
And if I bring in a load of great actors, I look really good at my job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I care about. Yeah, like, yeah, if yeah. I bring in actors where my director or my producer or whoever it is like, oh my God, they were all great. And we have a tough decision to then choose which way we're going.
That's excellent.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I want everyone to be brilliant and to feel that they can be brilliant and that they're supported in that, and that they leave an audition feeling like they've been creative and that they've just had a nice experience. Mm-hmm. I think that is so important. And I think that is harder to do on Zoom in your living room,
yeah,
with your laptop like all propped up on books,
squashed into a corner that's a blank wall,
just all of that stuff. Like, I just think that we're asking more of an actor in that situation than we are of like, come along, grab a cuppa, wander to Spotlight,
yeah,
be greeted by the lovely people that work in Spotlight,
yeah,
and then come. In with me. I normally will give you a cuddle.
That was a question I had, is like, how do you achieve that comfortability and transparency for actors? Like, how do you work in the room? Unless that's a trade secret and it's a surprise.
It's definitely not a trade secret. I think I like to, I would hope that I just have, I'd like to think that I'm quite normal and that also like I'm quite approachable.
Yeah.
I'll always be friendly.
Mm.
And I think also, as soon as you're in the room, it's about making sure that there's a proximity between you and the actor that's comfortable, that's not like, oh, we're suddenly all sat behind a desk just watching you, you know, that actually you're welcomed into the space and that already it feels like a collaboration because of the way that I've set the room up. And then also having a moment to talk, to whether it's asking you about your day, like we probably might not have time for that, but telling you a bit about the project, or asking if you had any questions or ideas that you want to talk to about the scene first, or giving you an extra little nugget of information or something that makes you go, oh, okay, now I can play.
And how much sort of like information and like prep time would you, I mean, obviously it doesn't always happen this way, but what is your ideal setup for an actor coming into the room? Because so often we talk about, I've just received this casting and I've got to do it tomorrow, or I've got to do it in 2 days, which is crazy. And obviously the CDG have their like guidelines, the Casting Directors Guild, if no one knows what that is. They have guidelines towards self-tapes and, you know, how long actors should be given and things like that. How often do you find you're able to achieve that, and how much are you actually in control of that? Sorry, that was a lot of questions.
Was a lot of questions, but that's okay. I'm not always, I don't have much control over it because it's completely down to production.
That's so what it feels like this end.
If they're like, we're shooting in 3 weeks, we want you to cast
tomorrow.
So with that though, I always then just have to work out what the best thing for the process would be and for the project. Because I don't want to squeeze in 3 rounds of auditions in 3 weeks, because that would give nobody any time to do anything. So that's something that we don't have control of. But what we can control or advise is when, at the beginning processes of a production, if we're spoken to early enough, we can then say, well, look, we want X amount of weeks or months to do this process. Because at the end of the day, the more time and budget you give to a casting process, the more thorough and brilliant it will be. And at the end of the day, you're then going to get actors who you've spent time with, that the director has really had time to spend time with, that we've gotten to know, and that the actors feel like they know the project that almost they are like investing time. In. Yeah, almost. It's yeah,
like
yeah.
that comfortability they've that spent, you have in theatre.
Yeah,
you get
it. They've had a bit more time to...
Yeah.
Be involved. And everything is better when people are working with passion, and if they're already invested and passionate about the project because they've had such a positive audition process, then that's amazing. That's what's gonna make everything great. So yeah, it's not normally our choice as to how long we have for a casting process, but we can advise as much as possible.
I'd like 6 months,
yes,
please.
So, we do have more questions, but before we go to some of those other nuggets, I think this would probably be a good time that we reach and get to your absolute scene.
Oh, really? Now?
Now, we're going to do that.
And he's going...
We're going, I thought this would be the end. Yeah. So, well, we like to... Like the apex. We like to sort of like do... I guess sort of like as we reach the sort of like the apex of the interview, we sort of get to the absolute scene. And then we end on sort of high because we've got more... We've got other things to,
To be talking about.
We know you're excited.
Oh, don't worry. We're going to
chat. Okay.
We've got more.
I still have so many things I want to pick out of your brain.
For our listeners, obviously we get our guests to talk about their absolute scene. It's their scene that either from a film, TV, or a TV show, or a play,
or even a poem,
anything that inspires, chapter of a book, or even a song that either inspires them, gives them chills, or it might be the thing that's got them into this mess in the first place. Or it could be something that in the darkest moments of creativity that they might turn to for that bit of that nugget of inspiration to get them to pull them out of that well, perhaps. Over to you, Jess, as to what your absolute scene is. You don't obviously have to act it out or anything, but for our listeners, if you'd like to say what it is, where it's from, who it's by, and then just sort of talk a little bit about it.
Okay, right. I had two answers for this.
Oh,
because
this is great.
I think I am going to give you more. So one of them, which isn't now going to be my main one, was purely because I remember being in the cinema and this moment happening and being like, yes, yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. Was, I'm a bit of a Marvel nerd, Infinity War, the moment when everyone comes back in and then Cap gets the hammer, Avengers, like nuts. And I remember being in the cinema being like, ah! Like, it's so good.
It's happening.
And then the following moment when all the female Avengers and Pepper lands in a superhero pose. I'm like,
I've actually got
goosebumps
right now.
Even someone who isn't a massive, like, I have watched that clip so many times because you can feel the energy.
It's what,
like I don't know,
10
all of it,
years or whatever of films led to was that 100%, moment.
100%. Yes.
And I just think the way they've navigated that moment was brilliant. And by that point as well, like, yes, of course Cap was worthy. Of course Cap was worthy. Yeah. Like, all of it. So that was great. And I was going to say that. And then I was like, I could not get one other out of my mind.
Okay.
Yeah,
but
great.
This one, you're going to judge me for it.
No.
Well, you'll wait and see.
So I grew up, which I think, like a lot of people my age in their mid-30s, you seem so young.
Thank you. Someone said this to me yesterday and I was like, it's SPF. It's all a lie.
Oh, okay. Well, I think, so I grew up watching EastEnders, like those long-running soaps and stories, and you're so invested in them.
Mm.
And every so often, you know, it's the time where you couldn't choose what was on. You had four channels to choose from. Yeah. You watched EastEnders every night with your mum. Like, that's what you did. And every so often, the scripts and the stories, and you're so invested in these characters, they then do something.
Mm.
Phil gets shot, something like that.
Yeah.
Like, and it's so, and it rocks, and the whole country gets rocked by it.
Yeah, because everyone's watching it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That everyone is watching it. And for me, the time I remember the most, and it was like a freight train of writing that knocked me sideways.
Yeah.
Was Cat Slater with You Ain't My Mother. Oh, yes, I am!
God, yes.
And it
what a moment.
Shook me. Like, what writing, what brilliance, what to do to the biggest audience you have in the UK that are so invested in these lives.
Yeah.
And they've still managed to completely take us all out.
And I think that the thing, especially with that, is where it felt sincere from the writing as well. It's not like where they felt a couple of weeks beforehand of, oh, what twist can we put on here? Mm. This was felt that like a year, two, three, many years before then, when they first introduced the Slater family, they knew this was going to be the apex of that narrative.
Yeah.
That they knew that that was going to be the culmination of that family's narrative was going to be, bam, that twist. And did we see it coming? I mean, you know, it might be the detractor who maybe goes, no, sure they're coming. But I don't think anyone did. And it was, and it's funny that you used to say about investments as well, because I actually see both of those absolute scenes as investments.
Yeah.
It's like you've got,
long
it's term. For me, because like you explaining about the scene from Infinity War, whilst it isn't my absolute scene, it's definitely up there in my top sort of like five, potentially even three. Because of that investment, that nearly sort of decade and a half of investing into narratives, into characters, into a world.
Yeah.
And then that culmination of all of that emotional investment, time, money, energy, whatever it is, and going, oh, it's happened.
Yeah.
This thing has happened. And I was hoping it was going, but they're two entirely different sort of like investments as well. Investment of characters in the Marvel world, and I want this thing to happen, it's happened, and they've rewarded me for all of that.
Yeah.
Whereas with EastEnders, it's, you know, some people have been watching it for 35, 40 years. I know this soap to be as good as I've always said it to be. Damn, they've just proven me right.
Yeah.
With stuff like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good choices.
And it's
excellent choices.
It's just like that moment in what is, like, this is why I just don't think we can downplay these long-running shows or soaps or whatever, like, they serve such a purpose. And I think they still do, but they definitely did to me in my youth and in growing up. Like, and I went to drama school and I was like, I want to leave here and I want to go on EastEnders, thanks.
Yeah.
Like, it was, and then go on Strictly. That was my dream. Yeah. Like, EastEnders, Strictly, that was it.
Beautiful.
I'm very glad I'm not in the limelight now.
Oh, no.
Do it.
Right, we can make a call.
No, thank you. But yeah, like, and they've just so got their place. And when they do something like that, that is just so brilliant, like, amazing.
But you do feel it, like, my grandma loves EastEnders and she's one of those long watchers. Right? And it's so interesting whenever I go and see them and watch EastEnders with them, you can just see that they feel like they're a part of that family.
Totally.
And I think it's that, like, heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching surprise. Like, twists in general are incredible, but I think you're so right, when you've got that investment, it's just like, amazing.
So, and I think it was literally 50-50, the UK, wasn't it? You watched Corrie or you watched EastEnders. So 50% of the British population were shooketh at once.
Everyone was like going into school or going into work, like, did you see EastEnders? Because also you wouldn't have, like, WhatsApped anyone to be like, oh my God, you would have had to wait till the next day.
Water cooler.
Oh my gosh. No work got done the next day. Everyone was just chatting about it.
Just talking about this later.
Great choice.
So, yeah. Oh my God. Speaking of investments, we're now back into questions again.
Okay,
because that was so excellent and it's made me think of this. So, speaking of investments of worlds, if you were to work on a specific world or series or IP, what would it be? I know we gently spoke about the Hunger Games, but like,
that would be fun.
Which would it be?
I thought of this very quickly. What I would love to work on. And I would love to work on playable versions of our nostalgic films. I want to do a playable version of The Goonies. I want to do a playable version of Back to the Future.
Nice.
Like,
Back to the Future. Yes.
That's what I want. Yes. That's what I want.
That's a great
But choice. I so just like, don't know if I could allow it to happen with new actors.
I know what you mean.
Like, but that...
You'd need
imagine
the vintage actors.
Yeah. But just imagine being able to be fully immersed in those worlds. Yeah, and so there we go. It feels very
opposite of what's kind of trending now. Like, obviously a lot of games are getting made into series.
Yeah.
So I don't see any reason why it couldn't happen.
I mean, I would, like, I don't know if I should say this. I would prefer to see Back to the Future as a game than a musical.
Have you seen the show?
No, I haven't. Yeah,
it's amazing. Yeah, but it is my favorite film.
So again, like, which is why, to be fair,
but do you is it like a direct, or have they shifted it and it's a bit different?
There's tiny moments. Narratively, overall, it's the same. There's tiny moments that make it work.
An independent
and kind of but no, I think as such a fan of the film, I just absolutely bloody loved it. And I just thought it was brilliant. The guy that plays George McFly, it's so spot on. It's almost scary.
Oh, maybe I'm going
maybe
to,
need to go
really,
and
maybe
a
I'm going to really enjoy it.
I think you should.
I don't know
if he's still in it. I saw it a couple of years ago.
I think my fear would be that something like that would, like, because I'm so protective over a particular,
they've done it with such love, though. You can tell.
I mean, that's great.
It's been done with such love and such passion.
And maybe go and see it now rather than in 10 years if it keeps running. Because I think the love would still be there, but it does change over time and become more commercialised, doesn't it?
Yeah,
a little bit.
But I love that answer of yours. That is great.
That would be fun,
that's
wouldn't it?
That's very cool.
What would be the first one you would adapt? Would it be
Back to the Future?
Back to the Future.
But I think actually, as in terms of...
Better playability.
What, playability and what would suit a game more. I think Goonies would probably.
So I was saying, Gabrielle, this before you arrived. So when you obviously came on this way, I spoke to my wargaming friends on our WhatsApps. And
very excited you were coming.
They were very excited because you cast Space Marine, Warhammer 40,000 Space Marine.
Space Marine 2 and also Battle Sisters.
Yes, and many of them are very. We'll be getting Space Marine 2 because we've all played Space Marine, the computer game anyway. And so we were talking about different, like we were talking about various. I asked them what questions that they would like me to ask you.
Oh,
there were lots, and they're all good. They're all nice ones, but I also had to narrow it down because there was a lot of questions. But the one that sort of like stood out the most, and that we sort of all agreed on would be most prevalent to ask would be. Because of, like, in particular with, like, existing franchises, so, like, for example, the Warhammer universe or the DC universe with Suicide Squad, do you find that knowledge with your actors that you're casting is a help or a hindrance when you're casting for these franchises?
I don't think it's either. But I definitely wouldn't expect people to have an invested knowledge.
Yeah.
Because I believe that there's always room for interpretation, whether that comes from the actor or also the narrative team and the director. They might not want it to follow completely on what you already know. Mm. When I was cast, when we were doing Suicide Squad, it absolutely isn't anything like any of the films or anything that I know. No, exactly, so like we were looking for something so entirely different in the majority of the characters. So I almost had to put what I thought I knew out of my head and work purely on the sources that I've got and the script and character designs and stuff that I've got. So I'd say for actors, it's in general, not just if you're auditioning for something known. A, you probably won't know what you're auditioning for.
Of course, yeah. For the
So Space Marines, I think we wrote some I think they were all knights.
Oh, really?
that they were auditioning for some made-up game.
Yeah.
And they were all knights. Because as soon as you would say, well, they're 8.5-foot super soldiers, people would be like, I think I know what games
are. Yes, yeah. Dead Societies. I think I might
having
know
to change like all the DC characters. So
yeah, of course, yeah.
I know, I remember calling up this actress, Victoria, to tell her that she'd got the role of Wonder Woman and being able to tell her only then that it was Wonder Woman. Oh, and she was like,
oh wow!
What? Oh my! And she got quite emotional on the phone, and it was one of my favourite moments ever.
Yeah.
But she didn't know, so she did 4 auditions for this job.
Yeah,
without knowing what she was auditioning for.
See, that's something that always makes me quite nervous because I'm the kind of person that likes to over prepare and really know the material.
Oh, but you get material, you get it all.
So you might be able to make an educated guess. Well, because I had a friend who auditioned for the Star Wars films, and he was like, I knew immediately because it was like, and he takes his light stick out, and you're like, pretty sure we know.
I like to think I'm a little bit better at covering that.
I mean, I auditioned for Watchmen for the TV series, and but I had to lay cutlery and a tea set on the table. Yeah. It was to play Ozymandias's butler,
the one
who gets cloned,
and
then killed and then recloned and stuff that he's been doing at his home. And that was it. That was the audition, just to lay stuff out. That was the audition.
Wow.
They'd already warned this is for, they'd said it was for an HBO TV series. That's all we can say. There's no scripts. This is
what is it at that point, like if you're not able to give too much information to the actors, like are you just kind of looking at essence in
So we pick out what's really important narratively or within the character that I want to look at in that moment. What I encourage and what normally happens is once you get through the audition process and we're at recall stages and stuff, they then normally ask actors to sign an NDA. Mm. And we will tell you then everything about
it. So you can really hone in on.
So with Space Marine 2, everyone had signed NDAs by their recalls, I believe.
Great.
And were then auditioning, knowing what they were auditioning for, because there's such a physicality. But before that, I'm just trying to eke these elements out of actors without telling them specifically.
My friend Dan did ask if I could ask you this. For the aliens, for the Tyranids, do you cast people to do the voice acting for the, or do they do the snarls and all of that sort of like the non-verbal stuff? Does a director use pre-existing sounds for that, or do you actually cast voices?
I cast voices, but I mean,
do you actually get actors to do all that sort of stuff as well?
Yeah. Okay. Not, I didn't for that game.
Right. Okay.
I cast the principal roles and all speaking roles as full performance capture. They're all doing full PCAP.
Yeah.
I believe additional voices were done with a studio, other games, yes, I cast weird non-human voices and get actors to do all sorts of weird stuff.
So fun.
So yeah, it really depends. But that's where I'm a big push. I like to put a big push on full performance capture where possible, because I just believe that voice and body work together. Yeah. And so when I work with an actor that may be doing only voice, especially when it's something out of the ordinary or non-human or just a big and non, just not normal talking maybe, it's so important to meet with them and allow physicality to be a part of that creation.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I think it's really important.
Mm.
And there's a number of voice studios now that just have enough space to allow freedom of movement for actors, which is so important.
Because it's so intertwined.
And it connects with the breath and it connects with everything. And as long as you've got the technical understanding and know-how of still making sure that we're picking up what we need to and that you're not, you know, rustling all your clothes and doing all the annoying stuff, then absolutely we need you to, yeah.
So actually, in terms of that, like, technical vocab and stuff like that, when you're casting, so this is kind of on a selfish note, I'm not going to lie, as someone who's very interested in this work but has no experience in this work, do you, obviously you want people that have experience, but, like, do you, not necessarily? Like, how do you look at actors' CVs and, like... Mm. What is it that stands out for you and is important? And, you know,
It is a project by project thing.
Yeah,
it really depends on what the project is and who the team are that I'm working with, and what the character is. Can I give you an example of a project?
Please.
So there was a project called Synced Off Planet, brilliant video game, and I had worked with both the performance director and the narrative director before, so we already had such a great language, and they're two of my faves.
Aww,
I love working
with, cool.
But because they have such trust in me and in the process, and they like actors. And that sounds so basic, but it's true.
But
they like actors,
don't.
And they're...
You can feel it.
Yes. And they really want to create environments where actors thrive. So when we cast Synced, again, I'm given a real creative freedom to have quite a broad, varied list of actors that we're going to meet with and bring in. And that's always collaborative with the director and with the team. This team happened to be in Montreal, so they really trusted that we are the ones that know our UK actors, so that's lovely.
And was it shooting in Montreal? Like
recording in the UK, so they came over for all recording sessions. But not only that, the performance director is a guy called Damien Goodwin. I hope he doesn't mind me absolutely name-dropping him there. He's such a brilliant director that it's his job. You can tell he believes it's his job to find the ways that the actors work and how to get the best from them and to find the language that suits each actor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so malleable, and that's what makes him so brilliant. And through an audition process, there was one particular role where there was this young actress and she was just so brilliant for the role. And it was a voice-only job. This was a voice-only game.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just something in her voice. And she was so raw but brilliant. And so the conversations after that happened were that our team, the game developer, allowed there to be room in the budget to tag on another hour to every one of her voice sessions so that she always had plenty of time to be able to work at a pace and to understand the technicalities that were required of her.
Because she'd never done it before. That's wow. Incredible.
And she'd never done game work before, and she'd never done voice work before. So...
And was she like a fresh grad, or had she been
out
for a while?
She was a fairly fresh grad. Okay. I think she'd been out a year or two.
Okay.
But that didn't actually matter. It was just that she was the right person for the job and that we were then supported by a game dev that knew that what would be best for their game
with her voice
was the best actor for the role.
Yeah.
And being able to nurture that and give and know that actually putting her in a voice booth and trying to rush her through her job would not be the way to get there. And so giving her the time and space was amazing. There's been a number of actors that I've... there's been quite a few that I've given the first ever professional job to. There's been others that it was by far a big stepping stone.
Mm-hmm.
There's a game that's coming out called Unknown Nine, and there was... A couple of actors in there, one that springs to mind, I'm not going to name her. I don't know that. Like, I cast her, but I don't know her well enough to then just be like,
Yeah.
Put you in the deep end. and she was such a brilliant, raw talent.
Mm.
And there was something about her that I didn't want to lose that.
Great.
And then she's on set, and the lead's Anya Chalotra, and we've got such brilliant... experienced cast around her, which was just perfect, and they all nurtured her. And as a cast, they became a real company. They that thing shoved over 3 years.
Oh, that's really exciting!
Wow.
So the cast were also close, and it was brilliant. And it's just like those moments where you are supported by production to make sure that the actors are central, because if we're putting the actors and performance central, then your story is. Mm. And that's what we're all doing here. We're telling stories.
Yeah.
So we need the best storytellers.
Mm.
And
so it's
giving
just
them the
literally
space.
Project to project, character to character, you kind of
I
like
can't
see.
Remember what the question was.
No, it's just to do with like lack
rambled.
Of experience.
No, I love it.
No, it was
brilliant.
Great. It was really
I don't mind. Yeah. I don't care about your experience.
Great.
As long as you're the best actor.
Then that's all that matters.
So
is it final question time?
It is final question time. It's your final question. This is absolute
this
always
is my
your
favorite
question. Love it.
If we could ask, like, what's one question that you always wish people would ask you?
I have no idea.
That is fine.
would you like more affordable childcare so you can work? Yes, please.
Amen. No, yeah. 100%.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Other than that, I don't know. That's a great question. I think your questions have been great.
Oh, thank you.
And like, they've been very fun to think
your
about.
Your answers have been great.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I
hope
so.
It's been fantastic. Yeah. It's going to be very difficult to edit. That's fine.
No one needs that in their lives to listen to.
Yes, they do.
But no, I can't think. I think it's lovely. And I think if ever I do these things, I just sort of want people to take out of it that just keep doing what you're doing and you're great. And it's not your responsibility solely to be great on your own. It's so collaborative, and telling stories is collaborative. And we all just want everyone to do the best. Mm. And we all just want to work on nice, great projects with nice people. Mm. That's
exactly.
Huge.
I think that's such a good way to end the episode. Yes. that is my sentiment and my feelings completely. So I'm so glad you said that.
Good.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for spending time with us. And thank you for listening. This has been Absolute Scenes with Jess Jeffries this week. Join us next week where we have another guest giving their Absolute Scenes. And if you are in a room in the next week or next month or next year with a casting director, don't forget, they've probably wiped someone's bum that morning. So you'll be okay. Don't worry. Okay, see you next week.
Bye. Great show.
You've been listening to Absolute Scenes, written and hosted by Andy Barton and Gabrielle Shepherd.
Produced by Synchron Productions in association with the Bristol Old Vic Theatre.
Music by Brian Hargreaves.
Marketing and communications by Dylan Tozer, Amanda Adams and Gabrielle Shepherd.
Please like and subscribe in all the usual ways, depending on the platform that you're devouring this on.
We've also set up a page on Buy Me a Coffee, where if you feel so inclined, you can become a supporter of the pod and help us and our guests. But honestly, we're really glad to be in your ears, so absolutely no pressure.
And tune in next time, where it will be much the same, but different. Like each of my visits to my barbers.